We said last week that the Rambam takes up a different opinion. How is that property?
We took up the first two.
And the first one was that there are no particular requirements
For the prophet, that basically anybody could be a prophet. So, except they said someone who's morally wicked. But other than that, an ignoramus could be a prophet. So he said that view was based on the concept of prophecy, which was basically that prophecy is nothing, it's a simple type of a thing, in which the prophet is basically passive. And the recipient of the message which comes from God. It's like flashing onto a screen. So any person can serve as a screen. It doesn't require any sophisticated understanding. Except they wouldn't go so far as to say that a wicked person could be endowed with prophecy because God wouldn't honor such a person. It's a great honor to receive a message from God, and God does not associate himself with a wicked person. That's not the view of the Torah. That the Rambam says that's the view of the majority of people, but it's false view. Right. Then we went to the other view, which is the view of the philosophers, who hold that prophecy stems from the natural faculty in man. And that, I tried to explain that point, that it existed in the framework of the natural order. That is to say that man has a potential for prophecy. Provided that the faculty is in a proper form, and provided that he brings it to its perfection, then it will occur naturally. It's like anything else that a human being is capable of doing. Of course, it exists only very rarely within a minority of the species, but that doesn't matter. But many things exist within a minority of the species. But when it occurs, it has to be regarded as a natural phenomenon, not as a miraculous phenomenon. Okay. We went further and we explained how this could be so. It seems to be absurd to even say such a thing. So we said that this view holds that what is prophecy? Prophecy is a insight into the future events, into the future events that which is beyond the scope of the normal perception. Now, since that which is going to be is determined by certain causes, right? These causes are of an intellectual nature. It's just that they're hidden from our view. Nothing happens by accident. What we call accident is just a descriptive term because we don't know what the causality is. And nothing that happens by chance, a leaf falls off a tree. I mean, we don't know when it's going to happen, but if we knew all the factors that were in operation, we'd be able to predict. So the prophet has access to the chain of causality. And since he has access to the chain of causality, he can predict these events. That's the view. Now, that's the diametrically opposed. Obviously, according to this, an ignoramus or an ordinary person could not be a prophet. So the question is, what is the view of Judaism? So we took up, I asked for opinions, and we had a few ideas. We had one idea was that in Judaism it's a combination. Well, the two, all right? Combination of the idea. That was Jackie's idea, that there's somehow a combination, that prophecy is basically an emanation, stems from God, but that it can only relate to an individual who's always affected. Okay? That was one view. That's a valid view, and I wouldn't be surprised if there were philosophers who maintained that view. Just so happens it's not the view of the Rambam. So let's read the view of the Rambam. The third view is that which is taught in Scripture, and which forms one of the principles of our religion. So therefore belief in this, obviously, is one of the foundations. One has to believe in the veracity of prophecy. It coincides with the opinion of the philosophers in all points except one. Now listen to the formulation, and I'm going to be asking you afterwards what you think is interesting or complex or difficult about it. For we believe that even if one has the capacity for prophecy and has duly prepared himself, it may yet happen that he does not actually prophesy. It is, in that case, the will of God that withholds from him the use of the faculty. According to my opinion, this fact is as exceptional as any other miracle, and acts in the same way. For the laws of nature demand that everyone should be a prophet who has a proper physical constitution and has been duly prepared as regards education and training. If such a person is not a prophet, he is in the same position as a person who, like Yerubam, is deprived of the use of his hand or of his eyes, as was the case with the army of Syria in the history of Elisha. As for the principle which I laid down, that preparation and perfection of moral and rational faculties are the sine qua non, our sages say exactly the same. Quote, the spirit of prophecy only rests upon persons who are wise, strong, and wealthy. We have explained these words in our commentary on the Mishnah and in our large work, that's the Mishnah code. We stated there that the sons of the prophets were constantly engaged in preparation, that those who have prepared themselves may still be prevented from being prophets may be inferred from the history of Baruch, the son of Neriah, for he followed Jeremiah, who prepared and instructed him. And yet he hoped in vain for prophecy, that he says, quote, I am weary with my sighing, and rest have I not found. He was then told through Yirmiah, thus saith the Lord, thou shalt say to him, thou seekest for the great things, do not seek. Interesting idea. Why did God inform him of that? You follow the gist of the discussion, right? Well, God communicated to Yirmiah to tell his Talmud, Baruch ben Neriah, not to trust. Give it up. It's not for you. Thou seekest for things too great. It's an interesting idea that the point is, though, that one of the principles of Judaism is that it's an interesting thing. We always say that a person should strive to reach its fullest potential. I mean, especially in the area of importance, like knowledge. Right? A person shouldn't be content with his knowledge. Because whatever he knows is just a fraction, and he should always seek for more, because this is the good. But, on the other hand, it's also important to recognize one's limitations, and not to enter into areas that are beyond your scope. See, people are for two possible reasons. Sometimes people are because of too much cautiousness, timidity. They're afraid to either that, I mean, it could be, I don't know, it could be fear, it could be laziness, a complacency, whatever the cause is, but they don't enter into areas where they should. And very often in communities, very often you find some people, they get good in a certain area, you know, like a person who has his thing, he's good in this subject, he's good in Gemara, he likes Chumash, he likes Navi, he likes Halacha, I like this, which is not right. There's nothing wrong with having a specialty. There's nothing wrong with having a specialty, but at the same time, it should not prevent you from going off into other areas and expanding your views and your horizon. Because in that case, the person has a defect. He doesn't want to engage in the exploration. Why? Because there's a certain amount of pain. He likes the quick enjoyment, the easy, it's become easy. Let's say you have to work at the business. You know, he's become good at it and he likes it, he gets satisfaction. So he doesn't want to experience a sense of frustration in a new area. Right? So he's depriving himself. And he's protecting himself. He's protecting his feelings. And that could be it could be a defect in learning. It could be a defect, as you know, obviously in all areas of endeavor. Not just in knowledge, but I'm sure it affects people professionally, etc. On the other hand, it's very important to know one's limitations. There are other people that suffer from the other problem, and that is they like to go into areas that they're not necessarily prepared for. That probably would be, I'm not going into all the causes, but it could be ego. A lot of it probably is ego. They have a certain ego idea. They can't stand the fact that they're not on a level to go into advanced physics and metaphysics or philosophy and so forth. So Judaism, there's no easy way. Judaism recognizes that knowledge is essential for one's perfection, but that if a person enters into certain areas, it can destroy it as well. So his search for knowledge has to be tempered by both factors. In other words, he can't be complacent and lazy, and therefore he has to exert himself to the utmost. At the same time, he has to be capable of knowing what his limitations are. And that's what God communicated to Baruch Samiria. This is too wondrous for you. You're not going to get it. Don't do it. Don't waste your time and your energy. Of course, it could be more than just a waste of time and energy. It could be dangerous. As you know, the famous story that four entered the Pardes. The Pardes is a reference to metaphysics, and only one emerged unscathed. Right? One went crazy, one, the damage, etc. It's to enter into areas, and that, by the way, that is really ideas which we got. By the way, the one who really illustrates this is Moshe Rabbeinu. Because Moshe Rabbeinu asked God, Hareini no esfodecha, please show me your glory. And the Rambam interprets that to mean that he wanted to grasp the essence of God's nature. And God's answer was, Kilo yirani ha'adam v'chai, that one cannot see me, that is, one cannot see me means to actually perceive. Perceive me intellectually while one is alive. However, Chazal say that when I wanted to, you didn't want. And when was that? By the burning bush. So he says, Vayachter Moshe Panav, that Moshe turned away his face. Ki yore lehavit el Elokim, because he's afraid to look at God. Now what does it mean he's afraid to look at God? The burning bush wasn't God. One can't say such a thing. The burning bush was a phenomenon created by God, right, to draw Moshe's attention. It was a manifestation. So Kiyare, his fear of looking at God, the Rambam says, he was afraid to intellectually try and perceive certain ideas about God. He drew back. That's what it means, he covered his face. So God says, when I wanted to reveal myself, you turned away. When I wanted to, you didn't want. Now did you want? I don't want. And that was the answer. Now Moshe, therefore, was involved in that issue, deciding how far he can go. And he decided that he had to cover his face, that he had to stop at a certain point. To try and go intellectually beyond that point, he held, would have been a danger. The guys later on say he could have gone further. But that's one could be wrong about a thing like that. You know, one is not always accurate in these things. I mean, you have to, like anything else, you have to decide. But these are the two poles within which a person has to maneuver. Interesting point. We return now to the words of the Rambam and the Maravukum. It may perhaps be assumed that prophecy is here described as a thing, quote, too great for Baruch. So also the fact that, quote, her prophets did not find visions from the Lord may be considered as the result of the exile of a prophet, as will be explained. There are, however, numerous passages in Scripture, as well as in the writings of our sages, which support the principle that it depends chiefly on the will of God. Who is the prophecy, and at what time, and that he only selects the best and the wisest. What does he mean by that? There are, however, numerous passages in Scripture, as well as in the writings of our sages, which support the principle that it depends chiefly on the will of God. Who is the prophecy and at what time? That's not the Rambam's position. That depends chiefly on the will of God. Because the role that God plays over there is of a different kind. And that would seem to be like your view. And that he only selects the best and the wisest. That's the view that Jackie was saying. That there are passages in Scripture which support the view that it depends chiefly on the will of God. However, However, God only selects the best and the wisest. So that is that there's a requirement for the government. But the nature of the phenomenon is that that's not the view of the Ramah, he's been explaining. Now he says something very interesting over here. We hold that fools and ignorant people are unfit for this distinction. It is as impossible for any one of these to prophesy as it is for an ass or a frog. I don't know that. He just means to decide the administration. Just like a Noah would imagine that a frog could prophesy. So he says, because that's impossible. But people don't imagine that. It's an interesting, why is it that way? Why is it that people don't imagine? The Rambam is saying that it's just as impossible. He's telling it to us for a reason. Obviously, because people don't look at it that way. People would say, no, a frog, of course can't. But an ordinary human being, who's not a great thinker, he can. Well, why is it that people would look at it for two cases different? But the Rambam is saying there's absolutely no difference. Let's try and resolve that. Emotionally, it may seem that an ordinary person is possible for him to prophesy because he's a person, he's a human being, even though he's not right. But the Rambam is saying if you look at the matter intellectually, it's neither what kind of a thing. It's impossible. Because he lacks the faculty. And conceptually, he's no different than the frog in this respect. It doesn't matter. So people make a distinction because he has a human form. So they view him, interesting, this is what he's saying. Since he has a human form, they view him as being closer to the real prophet than they do the donkey. Okay? But the Rambam is saying is that he's just as far away. Yeah. It makes no difference. It's not, you know what I mean? It makes no difference. Unless you say that he has the potential. Yeah, he is different in respect of the potential, but lacking that, you know, lacking that change, he's no different whatsoever. Well, prophecy is impossible without study and training. When these have created the possibility, then it depends on the will of God whether the possibility is to be turned into reality. You know, you have to study the Mora, especially the Rambam, any time his words are carefully chosen, but in the Mora, you got to be very careful. What is he saying over here? He's not saying it depends chiefly on the will of God in the sense that, you know, we just said before. We must not be misled by the words of Yirmiyahu. Before I formed thee in the womb, I knew thee. And before thou camest forth from the womb, I sanctified thee. What does he mean? He means don't be misled. Where it says, before I formed thee in the womb, I knew thee. He says this to Yirmiyahu. Which implies that I designated you from when you were in the womb. This is just not what it means. But this is the case with all prophets. It means to say there must be a physical preparation from the beginning of their existence, as will be explained. Let's just finish up the paragraph, anyway, then we'll summarize. As to the words, quote, from Ayin Yan, it is well known that the pious Joseph, when he was 30 years old, is called by the Hebrew Yan, Nar. Also Yahushua, when he was nearly 60 years old, was called Nar, Yan. For the statement, quote, and his minister Yahushua, the son of Nun, was young, occurs in the account of a golden calf. Moses was then 81 years old. He lived 120 years. Joshua, who survived him 14 years, lived 110 years, and must consequently have been at least 57 years old at the time when the golden calf was made, and yet he is called Nah, young. Nor must we be misled by prophecies like the following. Quote, I will pour out my spirit over all flesh, and your sons and daughters shall prophesy. That's a reference to the Moshe Mashiach. I will pour out my spirit over... So that implies that what? That what is prophecy? God pours forth his spirit over all flesh. That goes counter to the Rambam's view, right? He says, no, don't be misled by that. Since it is distinctly stated what is meant by prophecy in this place, namely, your old men will dream dreams, the young men shall see visions. So we call also prophets all those who reveal something unknown by surmises or conjectures or correct inferences. He means to say that people will be at a very high intellectual level. In other words, just like today, in the vernacular, they refer to a visionary as a prophet. Somebody, not a true prophet, right? They'll say that this leader was prophetic. He saw, you know what I mean? Yeah, he was prophetic. He was a prophet. He knew, and therefore he built this thing, whatever it is. It doesn't mean true prophecy. It meant that he had a good insight. Azal was the other. Thus, prophets of Baal and of Asherah are mentioned in Scripture. And God says, if there arise among you a prophet or a dreamer of dreams, as to the revelation on Mount Sinai, all saw the great fire and heard the fearful thunderings that caused such an extraordinary terror. But only those of them who were, this is a very interesting point, what was the status of the Jews at Sinai? But only those of them who were duly qualified were prophetically inspired, each one according to his capacity. Therefore, it says, come up unto the Lord, thou and Aaron, another than Avihu. Moses rose to the highest degree of prophecy, according to the word, and Moses alone shall come near the Lord. Aaron was below him, another than Avihu below Aaron, and the 70 elders below another than Avihu, and the rest below the latter, each one according to his degree of perfection. Similarly, our sages wrote, Moses had his own place, and Aaron his own. Since we have touched upon the revelation on Mount Sinai, we will point out in a separate chapter what may be inferred as regards the nature of that event, both from the scriptural text, in accordance with reasonable interpretation, and from the words of our sages. And the next chapter goes into the whole thing of Sinai, which is another thing, is that the Rambam deliberately wrote the sequence of the paragraphs. If you follow the Mora, you'll find you don't necessarily, one paragraph doesn't seem to follow from the previous one. It's very hard to, aside from understanding all the things he's saying, it's very hard to understand how he arranged. All this is done to deliberately, to for that same reason. That I mentioned before, in writing the Mora, the Rambam was faced with the same problem, that he certain things may not be revealed to the masses, because it's beyond their capacity. So he deliberately wrote it and organized it in a way that the average person would not be able to really figure it out, and wouldn't harm him. This was a major task that Rambam, he writes in the introduction, he has to justify, because he was going into metaphysics here, and metaphysics is a subject which cannot be taught publicly. So how did he have a right to do this? So he justifies himself, that he was transmitting certain secrets of Judaism which were in danger of being lost. And he did so, but he took tremendous pains to do so in a way that would not violate the injunction, and that it would come out the perfect work, that those who were prepared and they had the prerequisites would gain from it, his objective would be fulfilled, and those who did not have the prerequisites, he said, if they just read it on a simple level, they'll get something out of the book, and they won't be harmed by it. So very often, I mean, it's just an aside, it's a challenge to, we're just trying to figure out what one paragraph is doing in that context. But this is the end of the paragraph. So, how could you summarize the view of the Rambam now? Who can summarize the view? Obviously, those who came in the middle will be able to do so, but those who read the whole time. The essence is, as you said, we agree with the philosophers in all points, except for one. But this one is problematic. Because he says that we believe that even if one has the capacity of prophecy and has duly prepared himself, it may yet happen that he does not act it properly. The question arises, how could it? Well, the Rambam is definitely saying that prophecy is a natural phenomenon. Well, if that's the case, if he has the capacity and he's duly prepared himself, how can it happen that he doesn't prophecy? Because God is a being. It is in that case the will of God that withholds from him the use of the faculty. According to my opinion, this fact is as exceptional as any other miracle. So it's a miracle.
The miracle that he's not prophesying.
But he's feeling
that disagreeing
with
the other
genius,
because he's saying that he can't cause
him
to be lacking.
Cause him to be lacking or not to prophesy?
Cause him to be lacking
and that you have to be able to prophesy. Is that what I'm saying?
Is that what
you said? Not lacking, but I'm not sure. Let me just say what I mean. He gives the example himself. He says that this would be the same, the Rambam says like this. This is the diametric opposite of the first view holds that a person's prophecy is a miracle. Right? The Rambam view is that if a person who is geared and prepared doesn't, that's a miracle. The fact that he doesn't prophesy is a miracle. But he says the example he gives is the keynote of the case of Yeruvim that he mentions. When the prophet came to warn Yeruvim, and the Rebbe stretched out his hand against him, and his hand became paralyzed, and he couldn't bring it back. That's the case that he mentioned. Now, his inability to bring it back is miraculous, because in the laws of nature, if there's a cup here and you want the cup, right? Now, everything is geared so that if your mind gives your arm the signal, it has to happen. It must, with the laws of nature. If all this is, assuming there's no neurological problem, etc., if you reach forward to get it and it won't go, that's a miracle. That means that God is intervening and he's preventing the use of the faculty. So therefore the Rambam is there. If we're going to say now that just like I have a faculty to pick something up, so too I have a faculty to prophecy. When that faculty is in its proper state, I must prophesy. It's a natural thing, you must do it. Just like anything else, if I have the information in my mind to solve the problem, figure out the answer, and there's nothing stopping me, I have the time, no one interrupting me, I must come up with a solution, as the Lord mentioned. Unless something extraneous will prevent me. So that's God. That's his position. We agree with the philosophers then. That's the view of the philosophers. Except we disagree and we say that even if everything is there, God may intervene. Okay? What is difficult about the Rambam's position? Well, there is a problem, a logical problem, with maintaining this position. There is a problem. I don't mean questions. You could ask many questions. I'm sure the question that's on your mind right now is what determines whether God will enable them. Right? Why should it be this way? Correct? Why would God stop from me? I'm not asking. I don't know. That's not the question that I'm looking for. The position. If you want to be analytic, this position itself is problematic. And I would like to see whether you can spot the problem, as I always do. Now, not that God causes an imperfection in the person. That's a good point. And what him is saying is the way God operates is by bringing him down a notch so that he's no longer in the level of the prophecy. You know what you mean? We're not allowing him to attain the last step. I don't think so. You could make... Right, but it's not. I don't think so. Because the Rambam says it is... The Rambam says it's miraculous. When God does this, it is the same as when God prevents your Rambam from taking his hand back, which means that he had the full capacity to do so. I would also think that that would be complicated because God will not act to cause a person to go to a lower level. You follow? In other words, like this. Why would God, right? In other words, since prophecy reflects that the individual is on the highest state of perfection, okay, that's a good point. That is a good point. Yes. Now, for some reason, God may not want you to have the prophetic experience. That might not necessarily be in God's will. Why the Rambam hasn't said? But I would imagine that God simply prevents you from using the faculty. But why would God demote you, so to speak, to a lower level in which you're not on, you know what I mean? That I don't think would be or would be necessary.
It would feel that you really, that person did not necessarily attain a state of perfection.
It would be to say, the person has stated, no, but that's not what he's saying. He has achieved the requisite degree of perfection. It would be to say, in intellectual matters, if a person reached a certain level of knowledge and understanding and wisdom, and God just didn't want him to go into a certain area for whatever reason, why would God demote him and make him intellectually inferior? God could simply prevent them by other means from attaining the things. That's how I understand it. Although, I mean, your view is not entirely, buckled. But I don't think of it as a Rambam does compare it to the case of bringing his arm back. I mean, God did not demote the Rambam physically to make him physically. After that incident, he was able to use his arm. It was just a momentary thing. He'll divert. God will divert him. Oh, no, I don't know. No, he's around really, we don't know how God prevents it. God can prevent the person in many ways. I really don't know. I just don't know. He prevents him from using the faculty. The faculty is there, it's capable, he can prevent it from using it. Because obviously when a person is going to use it, he has to be in the best possible state, that God may prevent him from physically, whatever it means, yes, right, God could prevent him from getting into that state where he would properly. You see? I don't know. I don't know why. We're really, here's where we're going beyond that. Information is not necessary, I don't think. That's not the crucial point. We should be directing ourselves at the problem. There's something very problematic. In other words, what I'm saying is that the Rambam is not really saying anything yet. He's not giving us an answer. There's a problem with his answer. The key sentence, for we believe that even if one has the capacity of prophecy and has duly prepared himself, it may yet happen that he does not actually prophesy. In that case, the will of God, it is the will of God that withholds from him the use of the faculty. God can temporarily prevent you from using your faculty. And according to my opinion, this fact is as exceptional as any other miracle. And acts in the same way. So, if we now other miracles work, we'll now this one. Everybody's mind is going to be why? Why should it be?
How can it be?
How can it be?
It's very possible.
There must be a reason. But the fact that it's the law of nature, well, the master of nature, the one who's above nature, can
change it.
Right. Can do miracles. Do you believe in miracles? If you believe in miracles, the philosophers didn't hold miracles, apparently. The philosophers held, they believed in God, and they believed that prophecy is a natural faculty, but apparently, they didn't see this idea about a miracle. If it's natural, it's going to happen. Whatever is natural will happen. You're expressing the view of the philosopher. Yeah, what do you mean? If it's natural, it's going to happen. Why should it be different than anything else that's natural? The philosopher did not see the distinction.
There has to be a reason.
I'm not asking why. I do care very much, but that's not my question is. I'm saying that the actual position of the Rambam is difficult. Now, I mean, not everyone who has the that God can withhold it. Is that a halachic prophecy? Are you telling us that you're not telling us anything about prophecy? Isn't the same thing true? I'll tell you what, another word like this.
That's
not part of the idea of prophecy. God can't, that's part of anything. Since we accept the fact. In other words, if I'm asking you, what is your concept of prophecy? Right? So you're going to tell me your concept of prophecy. Your concept of prophecy is that prophecy is either it's a miraculous phenomenon, that could be your concept, or it's a non-miraculous phenomenon. What's the combination thereof, as you wanted to say? Fine. But if you tell me what the Rambam can say about prophecy, can be said about anything. What then is, what then is tennis? Is tennis a natural thing or a miraculous thing? It's a natural thing. But can't go into the field as a tennis player? That's not specific about the tennis. I'm asking you to tell me about prophecy. I want to know if it's natural or not. The answer is it's natural. The fact of the matter is that God can prevent anything that's natural from happening. That's what he told me. But that's true. In other words, that's true not because of something inherent in prophecy. That's true. Because God can't intervene with anything. So what's the wrong thing? I'm not telling that over here in prophecy, then you can say they're walking. Tell me, what is walking? Is walking natural or miraculous? Well, the Rambam will say that it's natural. Yeah, but God can stop a person from walking. So therefore, our view is, now I'll ask you this. If we were to ask the question, the view of the philosophers on walking and our view on walking. So the view of the philosophers is that walking is a natural thing, right? And anyone who develops the ability will walk. Good. Then you'll ask the Rambam, what's the Torah's view? He'll say, the Torah's view of walking agrees with the philosophers in every respect except one. We hold that a person can be able to walk with God by something. Would he say this? That's crazy when they say that the Torah's going to be walking. Right? The fact that God can prevent it for certain reasons, is true. So we see that God prevented the Rambam from using his hand. Does this change our view of using the hand? Now we say that our view of using the hand is different than the view of the philosophers. That doesn't make any sense. So what is the Rambam saying over here? So really, he should say that our view is the view of the philosophers. God wants to make it, of course. God can't mean anything. Anyways, I think that Hinda Bursi hit it right on the head. Let me state the position. There is a difference then, just to clarify matters, I'll ask you this question. How would you characterize the difference between God intervening in prophecy and God intervening in a person walking? God can, a person can have the ability to walk and God can stop him miraculously, right? Yet, if I was to ask the Rambam his position on walking, he would say that we agree, walking is a natural thing. So how would you conceptualize the difference between God intervening in a person walking and God intervening in a person? I think what you mean is that the act of walking is totally the other, totally given over to man. And not every act, God does not exercise a check on every act of walking. It's not built into the nature of the thing. However, in a given case, for whatever reason, God may prevent a person from using the faculty. But when God does so, it is extraordinary. However, in prophecy, it's built into the phenomenon that God exercises the constant watch of prophecy. And God exercises a veto power. That is to say that, let's use an analogy as though there is a gateway into... There's a gateway, and you have to get through all the obstacles, right? And when you've gone through all the obstacles, and all you have to do is walk through into the other room, right? Which you have the natural capacity to do so. But God has a watchman at that gate to see who you are, deciding whether to let you go through. So that if you are stopped from going through, right, that is a, right, because in the laws of nature you should be able to go through. You've gone through all the obstacles and you can walk through to the other side. But God exercises a veto power. And that is built in to the phenomenon of prophecy. It's built into the phenomenon.
So why can't you just say that...
So why is it not... What do we mean? Now we mean there is... Just let me finish the explanation. So but it's natural. When the person walks through and sees, right, when the phenomenon occurs, it is of a natural thing that occurs. You see? However, in order for this natural thing to occur, right, the person has to pass through the checkpoint. In other words, God exercises a veto. God exercises the veto over it. God has a constant watch. This natural faculty is tied in with God's permission, requires God's permission, so to speak, to be used. God may not allow it to be used. God may or may not. It's in the nature of the thing itself. But when it is used, it's not a miracle. It just means that God did not prevent it. You understand the difference? Well, you could say that as opposed to saying that God actually changes the person, picks you up. That's right. The other thing would be that man can't get over that canyon by himself. That God has to pick you up and take you over. Okay? You don't understand what miracle means then.
God is
not a miracle. But the fact that I'm permitted to experience this natural phenomenon, right? But the fact that I'm permitted to do so is due to God's permission. I need God's permission. But when God gives me the permission, he doesn't do anything to enable me. He's not enabling me. He's just not closing the door in my face. That's all. But that's different than the philosophers. The philosophers hold that it's like nothing else, like anything else. The philosophers hold there's absolutely no difference between prophesying and walking. Anyone who can walk will walk, anyone who can prophesy will prophesy. Absolutely no difference. We hold that in one respect it's the same. It's not the exercise of the faculty is natural.
But what about the
theory that this? The Rambam holds that so it's not been stopped. He's been tested. God is allowed to do it. $54 question, which I don't know that I can answer, but maybe some of you have some inspiration here. What is the reason for this? If the question would naturally ask itself, if it's a natural faculty and God implanted it in man, then why would it be this way? Why is it that a person now you can tell a person? God doesn't want a bad person to prophesy and so on and so forth, etc. But it seems to be protected that a bad person, it seems to be that God worked it out in a way that the danger wouldn't manifest itself because, yeah, anyone that had a defect wouldn't prophesy and so forth. So would have been disqualified extremely. I mean, the way the Rambam describes in the Mishnah Torah, the level that a person has to be on, it's not just a good person that's affected, but such a hard that one wonders how we have so many prophets.
And rich, that was a rich thing.
Well, the Rambam over there says, by the way, the Rambam is by life, it's a good point. Yeah, why would a person, why would wealth be the factor? Why would wealth be the factor? So the Rambam in a different place, the Rambam in a different place says that by wealthy, they don't mean materialistically wealthy, but Sameh Pachoto. Ezeh Oshia Sameh Pachoto. That means he was wealthy. One of his he tanked with what he had, which is very, very difficult.
That's the question.
But then the answer would be that it would be pointing out specifics of perfection, which specific aspect of perfection. That's an essential component. That capacity to be content with one's material possession would be a major element of perfection. According to that view, Jackie has correctly in perfection. We are true of perfection, but we have to know the particulars of perfection. And we learn from this that, parenthetically, we learn from this that Tanakh Pachelko is an extremely high level of perfection. It doesn't seem to be that way, because it's the kind of thing that, people don't seem to, regard as being that advanced, that hard. People seem to think, well, I'm content, I'm satisfied, and so forth. Apparently, it's not so simple. The true idea of Sameh Pachelko is not such a simple thing. It means, that's the idea that was expressed by Yaakov, as opposed to Esau. Do you remember in the Chumash when they had that what? Yes. Once they have a lot. When Yaakov wanted to give those gifts to Esav to pacify him, so Esav didn't want to accept it. They were going up and back. He refused it. He didn't want it first. He wasn't accepting it, but he first didn't want to. So he says, "Aki yesh li rav, yivachash alach." Right. Yes, we love. I have a lot. You have a lot. You people do have. So it was very nice. It was very magnanimous. He was willing to forgive him. And Yaakov wanted to make sure that he got the gift. So he said, please, he's pleading with him to accept it. Kichanani Elokim, the Chieshi Chol. Because God has favored me, and I have everything. So Rashi points out that that Esav used a expression of gaiva. Yesh li rav, I have a lot. And Yaakov used the proper expression, I have everything. Now, in a sense, it doesn't seem to make sense. Because, first of all, the two terms don't seem to be that different. I have a lot. I have a lot sounds good. I have a lot. And he said, I have everything. If anything, if he was ever a guy, then great, I have everything. But nevertheless, Rashi makes a very major point. This really indicates the difference between the two. One's a Rasha, and one is a Tzaddik. So what's the answer here?
A lot.
It implies one other thing. The term I have a lot, it also means how a person... Right, how a person relates to the physical, to the material. A lot means that it's not necessity, but it's relative. Because what is a lot? A lot means relative to what the other person has. So that's an expression of the gaiva. He feels good, he feels secure because he has a lot. But he's involved in the fantasy. He can't say he has everything because it all depends upon the relative. Now, a person that's involved in wealth as a fantasy to maintain a certain position, that's for ego, that's gaiva. So he can never say that he has everything. It's impossible because there's always something more out there. It's a means to bolstering his ego, and it's all relative to what others have. So how can you say he has everything? It's relative. Now, to be able to say that I have everything is a tzaddik gadol. Because he's living in the world of reality, and in reality, he's involved in the true good. So then when he turns to the physical, he only looks at the physical as a means to an end. So therefore, it's a finite thing. See, rav means infinite. There's no end to it. So since there's no end to it, how can I say I have everything? Then what? But I could say I have a lot.
because I compare myself to others that have less than me. Mm-hmm. That's the ego. Mm-hmm. But the person who's involved, because that's because he is not involved in the true good. So what is the good for him? The good is some fantasy. But if he's involved in the good, so then he looks at the physical as a necessity, as a means to an end. So he could say, this is what I need. He knows his needs. And they're finite. My needs are finite. You make a list of what his needs are. And then, what do you mean, you have enough? If you say this idea to the average person, I think you're crazy. You have enough. That's why the business, I don't know what the biggest building is. They don't stop. Why don't they stop? They certainly have enough. But they don't have enough. Because how can you say you have enough? There's always more. There's always more out there. So therefore, what you need is not determined by what your true requirements are, but by what is out there. So it's endless. It's endless. I could have this, I could have that, I could have the other thing. That also fits in very well at that very same story over there, the Chazal mentioned, by Yivata Yaakov Avada, right after that point. Right after the meeting with Esau, it says by Yivata, I think it was right before that, if I'm not mistaken, right before that. By Yivata Yaakov Avada, he was left alone when he had them cross the camp. That was before the meeting with Esau. When he had them cross over the at night, and he had the encounter with the Malach, so how did he remain alone? So it says that he, it was funny Chazal, it says that he returned for Pachim Kitaran. Because he was moving for the small stuff, right, the small stuff. But Pachim Kitaran, the small one. And it says, and we see from this, another Chazal, which implies the opposite. That the Tzadikim, their mammon, their money is precious to them like their lives. Because that's why they find the danger when he returns to Pachim Kitaran. When you have to get out of there, when you have to move, so you don't run back into the house to Pachim Kitaran. For the small stuff, I mean, if somebody...
Yes, is that
makes
your
choice?
Yes, that's quite the contrary. That's quite the contrary, right? Quite the contrary. One would say that just the opposite. You see, you would think a person, if you read in the paper about a person that there was in a house on fire and they ran in and they got killed, right? Boy, because of some small thing, some petty thing, even for an important thing, you say they're crazy. But for a petty thing? Yet Yaakov is praised. All right, he wasn't running into a fire, but nevertheless, he exerted himself, and it was a dangerous situation for Pachim Kitaran, for the little thing.
Essential.
It says the answer is like this.
He would have had to work to get him to replace them, and it would have been...
Yeah, but what about, but they're small, but they're trivial. But they're trivial.
No, but they're necessary.
That's the point. The point is that there is no... That a tzaddik, you see, that a tzaddik doesn't have Pachim Kitaran, what it means. It means what we would... See, it means this very interesting idea. Each person, if he looks at his own possessions, he will see that he has a lot of stuff he doesn't really need. Right? Junk.
Mm-hmm.
He has junk, he has too much, and he has to get rid of it. He has things he doesn't need. Now, what does that represent? Okay, I mean, practically speaking, I don't want to give anybody a guilt trip, because we all have this failing, but that means that you invested, you put your energies into things, into fantasy, you didn't really need it. So the thing that you really need, you don't throw out. I mean, like, you know what you really use. You can distinguish. You know, you look around a lot of stuff and you say, what the heck could I buy that for? This is not going to ever use it. I don't need it. And then, but you can't get rid of it because that would admit that you really, right? Or also, you're afraid maybe you will want it next week, you know, because that's the worst thing. If you give something away and then you find out that the other person gets tremendous use out of it and loves it and fantastic, you're going to feel sick. That's what happens. If you, a kid, will throw something out, he'll throw some toy out that he doesn't like and this and that, and he puts it outside. And then but he doesn't destroy it, like out in the garbage. Then never he comes along and takes it.
Okay.
Next door. And then he plays it every day and gets tremendous. The kid will want it back. And like the whole thing. And then there'll be a whole dispute. It's my thing, and he just, but you put it outside. Then you have to explain to the kid that once you put it outside, it doesn't belong to him anymore. But why will it suddenly be a problem? You see? Because that'll arouse the fantasy. Because the whole thing was just a fantasy. And he really doesn't have any true enjoyment out of it. But now that the other guy is enjoying it, suddenly it's, the fantasy is re-aroused. And he's afraid maybe he lost something.
Yeah,
want
value.
It has value. But the tzaddik doesn't have... really talking to time. It means today that everything was eisgechashven, as they say. Everything was worked out. So he had exactly what he needed. And therefore, even the things that are small... But they had a place, they were vital, they were essential. Everything he had was essential. And that's why he kept his possessions in order. Now, can anybody, let's see if we can on this note, though. Does anybody have any hint, any clue as to what the reason is? I know what bothers you is that why, if it's a natural faculty and it requires perfection, would God prevent it? And what's the answer to that? So Malki says that there must be a necessity of prophecy. Good point. Except we made the point, you weren't here last week. We said that there is really different kinds of prophecy. We distinguished the two kinds of prophecy. We said, well, sometimes God has a prophetic message that God wants to convey to people, right? As most of the prophecies in the Torah, right? A specific message to convey to the Jewish people. Then there's a prophecy which is purely for the edification and the perfection of the prophet himself, even though it has no social purpose. For example, as we said, the Mashiach, right, will be a tremendous chacham and will be on the level of prophecy, but he won't outright. As far as the nation is concerned, he won't play a role in his mission. He will not use prophecy to establish himself or to, you know, bring any practical. So therefore, we see that prophecy exists even without a so-called practical purpose, but purely for the intellectual perfection of the individual. Yes?
Because I was thinking about Jeremiah, and it's kind of, or he was the last prophet that had any following, really. And maybe it was because the people were so horrible that they weren't worthy of a prophet.
Yeah, I mean, weren't worthy, but. But that could be, you see, that explains a given instance.
Yeah.
What you're saying explains a given instance. Right? But the way we understand the Rambam, it doesn't mean that God can intervene in a given instance. Right? It means that it's a constant thing. So why, of course. But that could be any time. Yeah?
He just said something that his father came out with.
You know, if we see an illustration of the Rambam's position in the Chumash. Rambam's position is actually supported by a specific occurrence in the Torah, according to the interpretation of Rashi.
Who's that?
Yeah, it's true that when he was in mourning, he didn't prophesy. But that's not because God, that's because since he was in a state of mourning, he didn't have the proper, the proper ability, proper energy, whatever. In one respect, it's Jacob. And it's in Bereishis, chapter 49. And Jacob called his children and said, "Gather around, and I will tell you what will occur to you in the end of days." Right? And he comes to, he says, "Gather together and listen, O sons of Jacob, and listen to Israel your father." Now, if you read on, you see, he never revealed to them what would happen to them in the end of days. He goes on, he forgot. Rashi says, "Bikesh legalos esakeh." He wanted to reveal the end, to give them a whole panorama. At this moment in his life, when he was about to withdraw from the scene, and he achieved that state of perfection and objectivity, so he had a vision. He saw the whole course of human history, and the ultimate resolution and the redemption and the days of the Mashiach, and he wanted to reveal to them. He wanted to reveal to them. V'nistalek imenu shechina. And the Shechina departed from him. The Hizkel Omer, Vamacher. So God actually prevented him. And why? What's the reason? It would not have been different. In other words, it was essential. Each generation has to have a certain impetus to keep striving. To keep striving and improving and working and so forth. This knowledge would not have been different. This knowledge would have caused a certain stagnation. So I think that this might be the clue that prophecy is not so simple. Because, no. In other words, the man is supposed to operate. We have free will.
Against God's plan.
Yes, that's true. And our free will also has to operate in conjunction with God's plan. That's the point. And therefore, certain kinds of knowledge could be disastrous to God's plan. So that even though the capacity to obtain the knowledge is out there, not all knowledge is really, and that would answer your question too. It's true that knowledge is, but not all knowledge is really, man is not fit. Man is fit to obtain a certain amount of knowledge, a certain level of knowledge, and as we said before, certain types of knowledge can be harmful. So when you're entering into the prophetic, you've got to take into consideration the all many, many questions as to how it will affect the individual, how it will affect God's plan, and so forth. So that the God, in this case, Yaakov was ready. He had the vision. He was going to tell them. And then God took it away from him. So, because it would have been harmful. So that is, that would go a certain distance to explain the Rambam's position. That the veto power stems from the nature of prophecy, that this is something which can't always be allowed, can't always be allowed to manifest itself. Could be many factors. It could be that this person will know prophecy because it could have a bad impact on him. The fact that he experiences prophecy might, even though he has all the records, the fact that a person has the faculty, you have to understand one thing. The fact that a person is affected and he has a certain faculty does not mean to say that the actual experience could have certain negative effects upon him. The fact that he prophesies is possible, and therefore God doesn't want him to prophesy. Or it's possible in a given case. Here with Yaakov was a specific case. This particular prophecy, God didn't want him to enunciate. So God provoked him because of the particular. So it could be the guy, could be the person, could be the prophetic information, and so forth. I mean, it could be other things that we're not, you know, we're just speculating over here, but the case of Yaakov is a good illustration.